Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I think I may actually have my least hot take, the least hottest take I've done. Does that make sense? Does that sound good, grammatically speaking? This may be about as little of a hot take as I've had on a big topic, but if I kind of explain why, and I don't realize it's not the world's greatest setup for a conversation, but as I kind of explain why I'm kind of withholding or with, you know, keeping from giving into the temptation to kind of give a big time hot take on this topic, I think it'll make sense to you here coming up in just a moment. By the way, great to have you with us today as a part of Dog Nation Daily presented by Meriwether and Tharp. The other day, Danny Sheridan, longtime, you know, gambling analyst, really one of the first gambling analysts that you probably ever had, you know, back in the days, you know, pre-internet, you know, writing for newspapers, things like that. He goes on the Paul Feinbaum show. He is a regular on the Feinbaum show, and being asked about how he feels about Georgia for the upcoming season, made an interesting comparison for Georgia with its quarterback JT Daniels. As a UGA fan, I love to hear it. As someone who's going to try to give you his best, you know, takes and to the extent that I possibly can, the best evaluation of the current situation in college football, I'm not quite so sure if I'm ready to go in the direction that Sheridan's willing to go on this. Let me let you hear this from the Paul Feinbaum show, and then I want us to spend a couple of minutes talking about this. This is Sheridan touting JT Daniels as a way of also kind of talking big about Georgia for the upcoming season.
I would definitely think Georgia. I think they're loaded. I don't say they're as good as Alabama, but the most important position to me is if you have a good defense, good offensive line, et cetera, quarterback. And you would probably agree. And right now, Georgia probably has the better quarterback. Potential with Young versus Daniels, I don't know what the potential will be, long range, but Georgia's loaded, Paul.
Georgia's loaded, Paul. You got to love that at the end from Danny Sheridan. Loaded for the upcoming season. I love to hear about that. Listen, I was like anybody else. I was very impressed with what I saw from JT Daniels to close out the 2020 season. When he settled in at quarterback for Georgia, clearly Georgia kind of settled in offensively and really showed a potency that I don't know that it's shown at any point in time other than Kirby Smart. So there's a lot to like about JT Daniels, and obviously it is fun at any point in the offseason, even admittedly in an offseason we said we're trying to be hype free around here, it's still kind of fun to have somebody go on the Paul Feinbaum show and say, I think that JT Daniels got a better quarterback in Alabama, and I think, you know, if that's true, then there's a chance that JT Daniels is also the best quarterback in the SEC. But here is why I'm not quite ready to give a scorching hot take on this topic, and it's got nothing to do with any kind of skepticism about Daniels. I think we've already seen that Daniels is at least a very good quarterback, and maybe in 2021 he can take that next step towards being better, maybe better than the Alabama quarterback, better than any other quarterback in the SEC. That very well could happen for JT Daniels. That is at least in the kind of the threshold of possibility for all of this. But my reason for kind of wanting to take more of a wait-and-see approach about this comparison between Daniels and Bryce Young, the guy that we assume is starting at quarterback for Alabama, is almost solely related to the Alabama side. The skepticism I have about this is almost completely related to what's happening over there in Tuscaloosa. Because let's just be honest here for a moment. One of the things that we would have said last year around this time that made us feel good as Georgia fans about how Georgia fit into the conversation going into the start of the 2020 season about Georgia, how it fit into the rest of the SEC comparison was, hey, you know, Georgia may not know who its starting quarterback is going to be, we said a year ago, but Alabama doesn't know who it's going to be either. We didn't know yet how good Mac Jones was going to turn out to be. We had seen him some in the Auburn game and bowl game against Michigan. We had, you know, seen a little bit of what he brought to the table, but frankly, it wasn't all that spectacular. I don't think any of us could have known that Mac Jones would have eventually overseen what may be the most dominant offense in SEC history. In fact, I'm pretty sure none of us would have seen that coming. And so since Alabama a year ago kind of had this quarterback kind of emerge out of nowhere and put up the big numbers that he did, out of respect for what Alabama did, I am not going to say I know for a fact that JT Daniels is better than whatever Alabama's going to have at quarterback. quarterback because I saw how good Alabama's quarterback was a year ago, and I kind of saw that guy come out of nowhere. So I do feel like I have an idea of how good JT Daniels is. I sort of know what his floor is. I know what his ceiling might be. But over at Alabama, there's a huge unknown variable because of how good Mac Jones ended up being this previous season. Now, there's also a flip side of this coin as well. Because as much as honesty compels me to acknowledge that maybe Alabama puts together an offense again this year that rivals what it did a year ago, and maybe Bryce Young following in the footsteps of Mac Jones is just as intimidating for opposing defenses, maybe it's all just a replica of everything that happened before. Maybe that's, you know, maybe there's a chance that's what happens again for Alabama this upcoming year. But it's also fair to point out maybe it's not. And I've said this, that, you know, if you look at Alabama this past year, think about Barrett Jones, the great former Alabama offensive lineman, been on Dog Nation Daily before. We talked to him about the role that Nick Saban kind of has in this current team. And, you know, Jones told us as a lead into the Alabama game a year ago in a game which we thought that Nick Saban might not coach. Barrett Jones kind of downplayed the absence of Nick Saban. Now, as it turns out, he didn't miss the game. He did miss a game later on in the year, but did not miss that game against Georgia. But Barrett Jones said, listen, at this stage of his career, Nick Saban's not that involved in the offense anymore anyway, and I think that Barrett Jones is right about that. I've gone so far as to say that I actually thought that Nick Saban wasn't Alabama's most important coach in 2020. I thought that was Steve Sarkisian. Steve Sarkisian, who, you know, as an offensive mind, had kind of had some spotty performances prior to what Alabama did in 2020. I don't know that he was great calling plays for Bama in the 2016 National Championship game when he stepped in for Lane Kiffin. I know for a fact, as a Falcons fan, that Sarkisian's tenure as Atlanta Falcons OC was not particularly good, but somehow last year he conjured up one of the greatest offenses, maybe the best offense any of us have ever seen in college football. And now Sarkisian is gone. So as much as I will acknowledge in a comparison to JT Daniels, listen, there's a chance the Alabama quarterback for this upcoming season is just as good as Mac Jones was a year ago and just as good as any of the recent SEC quarterbacks have been. Recent history suggests you at least consider that as a strong possibility. But there is the flip side of that, which is, hey, maybe we also find out that in JT Daniels' comparison with other top quarterbacks in the SEC, maybe the Bama quarterback doesn't fit into that discussion this year because maybe we find out, much like we found out with LSU and Joe Brady back in 2019, maybe we find out that the absence of Steve Sarkisian means more for the Alabama offense than maybe was initially considered just because of how good he is and maybe how difficult he turns out to be to replace him, even if the guy you're bringing in to replace him is a former NFL coach. So I want to kind of sidestep any kind of attempt at hot takes on this for right now. I think I know how good JT Daniels is. I believe I know how good he might be if the Todd Monken offense fully falls into place, but the range of possibilities for Alabama, Bryce Young being as good as Mac Jones was a year ago, Alabama falling on, I don't want to say hard times, because let's face it, that program doesn't seem to fall very far when it does fall, but at least have some growing pains in terms of replacing an offensive coordinator, that is also a possibility as well. Now, let me kind of slightly shift gears, but stay on the same topic for a moment, because for the good here, Danny Sheridan goes on the Feinbaum show, kind of touts JT Daniels as the quarterback who might be the difference maker for UGA. But on the other hand, had a pretty harsh evaluation for what might be true for George if that does not fall into place this year. Once again, here is Sheridan on Feinbaum.
This is certainly no shock, the first three. Alabama, because of the way they dominate the conference, because of how well they're coached and because of their players. Same with Clemson. I don't see how Clemson loses an ACC game. It's like playing a little bit better than Vanderbilt. Ohio State totally dominates their conference, so I think you'd have to go with those three. And I would say the fourth team would be Georgia. I think Georgia's loaded. If Georgia doesn't win this year, Paul, you can forget it. They're not going to win for a long time. By win, I mean get to the Final Four.
If Georgia doesn't win this year, you can forget about it, Paul. They're not going to make it for a long time, and he means the college football playoff. Boy, it seems like we've had a lot of this lately, right? I mean, we had the David Hale quote the other day from ESPN. Now Danny Sheridan going on the Paul Feinbaum show that it's now or never for UGA, that this is the year that's got to be done. And if they don't make the playoff this year, I'm not sure they're going to. And frankly, we said it a million times before that we don't buy into that line of thought whatsoever. Obviously, this is an incredibly important year for Georgia. There aren't going to be very many years in the future where you obviously see it set up better than it does for Georgia. Georgia right now in terms of the relative ease of the schedule, the relative roster strength across most of the position groups. Not perfect in every area. No one is. So when it comes to chances to win big, there's not going to be an obvious year in the future where you know, it seems better than it does right now for Georgia, but it's also not a championship window that closes after this year either. And you know, frankly, all of this kind of speaks to just the various level of pressure that kind of exists on Kirby Smart's shoulders, on JT Daniels' shoulders in particular. On the one hand, you got the analyst that goes on the Feinbaum show and says, I think this guy may be a better quarterback than what Alabama has. And on the other hand, if he doesn't get it done this year, Georgia never will. Well, I guess welcome to the South, JT Daniels. Enjoy your first full year as starting quarterback there at Georgia. But while we'll push back on the ridiculous nature of the window closing, we will acknowledge this is a big chance for Daniels and Georgia to get it done. And Todd Monken, who's leading that offense for him, the chances of Georgia being almost as explosive as what Alabama and LSU have been in recent years, you could at least say there's some possibility that does occur. And if that does take place, Georgia as a playoff team, Georgia as good as Alabama, boy, we could see all that play out. Big, big offseason for the Dogs as they try to get all their offensive ducks in a row. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Meriwether and Tharp. So glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us. All kinds of video platforms now. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're now on Twitch. So much fun to be there on that. Of course, podcast platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, SoundCloud, worldfamousdognation.com, bunch of ways to get the podcast, and of course with our friends on the radio each and every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. No matter how you get to us, thank you for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp, and a big thanks to our friends at Meriwether and Tharp for making it all possible. You know, they're your source for Georgia divorce, and listen, in a show like ours with an audience the size of ours, we know a lot of folks in our listening, viewing range right now are dealing with the challenges of a divorce. Either you're in it right now or you're fearful that you're might about to be in it. Well, if that's your situation, if that's where you find yourself today, then trust me when I tell you that the folks at Meriwether and Tharp and the, you know, experience they've gathered in cases similar to yours over the course of thousands and thousands of these cases, they want to put that work together for you, and they want to provide you a solution to one of the most challenging scenarios you might have ever faced. I know you've got questions about the divorce process. If you find yourself maybe on the doorstep of maybe having to do that, well, if you've got questions, Meriwether and Tharp has answers. You can go to their website, theatlantadivorceteam.com. You can take a look at a lot of free resources that are available to you there, and then you can make the decision to have an initial consultation with one of Meriwether and Tharp's lawyers, and then after that, make the choice to put them to work for you, to allow them to help you be made whole once again with your relationships, your finances, all the important stuff that goes along with that. Please find them online, theatlantadivorceteam.com, and that'll get you in touch with Meriwether and Tharp. All right, let me explain to how today's going to go here just for a little bit. Next couple of days, we are pre-recorded, but we have great shows planned. The one thing that is true, if late breaking news happens sometime today or Friday or Monday, we may miss that and not be able to talk about it until Tuesday. But even though these shows are, as I said, pre-recording, kind of already in the can, we are still working really hard to hopefully make these informative and entertaining. Some would say, why are you going to start now? But the point is, we didn't mail these in. We're doing some fun stuff here and looking forward to having you be a part of that. In fact, coming up in just a couple of minutes, some really good stuff with Jeff Centel related to the 2021 recruiting class for Georgia as we kind of get ready to put a bow on all of that. With that in mind, before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here for a moment. And I just spent some time talking about a big comparison for Georgia quarterback with JT Daniels, what Alabama might have, and all the exciting things that could happen for the Georgia offense. But it's important to take a note to remember this, though. And Kirby Smart did an interview the other day with Rivals.com. I'll put a link to this interview when I post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. But in that interview, Smart said, hey, you may think you got great things going on with your quarterback, JT Daniels, whoever else, but just remember this. This is still a league where offensive and defensive lines really matter. And obviously, the work that Georgia did for its 2021 recruiting class would seem to be once again a big time validation of that. So here is Kirby Smart briefly with Rivals.com.
You know, in our league, it's a line of scrimmage league. People say that, and you know, more and more say, well, it's a skill player league. Well, you don't have an opportunity to throw the ball to those skill players. You know, Mac Jones and JT Daniel, those guys wouldn't be standing upright if they didn't have a great offensive line in front of them.
I think that's a really important point from Kirby and well said there. In fact, as a lead-in to some of the recruiting stuff I'm about to do with Jeff Centel, let me let you also hear Kirby from that same interview talking more about some of those offensive linemen that Georgia did indeed sign. This is Kirby once again.
Michael's a guy from Nelly Camden that we always wanted and thought was a really good player, and I think he's going to develop into a really good player. Not only that, he's really smart. You know, on the offensive line nowadays, defenses have got so complicated, you got to have bright guys. Marius does a great job there. Dylan has been wonderful for us. And then Jared out of North Carolina was a kid that we targeted a long time ago and thought was a really physical. You know, the guards in the SEC have to be able to block three techniques, which are probably the NFL comes to the SEC to get three techniques because they're the biggest, most physical, fast pass rushers. So the guards, you know, the Solomon Kinley types, the young man in Alabama, Deontay, you got to have those kind of guys that can eat space, and that's what we think Jared does a really good job of.
So you love that evaluation of Jared Wilson and Mike Morris and Dylan Fairchild and Marius Mims, the offensive lineman that Georgia brought in for the class of 2021. When we talk to Jeff Centel here a little bit over the course of the next couple of days, the offensive line position is going to come up a lot in those discussions as well. Really, Georgia doing as well in that position group as it has at really any point in time in the Smart era, and certainly ranking very high amongst all the position groups that Georgia recruited for this class. Georgia really getting it done with the offensive line. Interesting to hear Smart talking about that. You'll also hear some of that from Jeff Centel over the course of the next couple of days as well. With that in mind, in fact, let's get ready to transition here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Merriweather and Tharp. We're going to enjoy this. Jeff had a piece at dognation.com the other day where he looked at kind of some senior superlatives, the guys in the 2021 class and how he would rank them and what you'd say about this guy and outlook for the, their early days at Georgia. This is really good stuff. So let's transition from around the doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Merriweather and Tharp to a fun conversation for Jeff Centel that'll actually stretch over the course of the next couple of days, looking at the very best of the 2021 class. Fun stuff from Jeff Centel. Good to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Merriweather. Weather and Tharp.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So we're obviously pre-recorded on today's show, and really for the next couple of days, we're going to have great shows and great content planned for you. In fact, a chance to talk even more UGA recruiting. No better person to do that with than our buddy Jeff Centel, who joins us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp here today. Jeff, thanks so much for spending some time with us. I certainly appreciate that, and I look forward to looking a little more deeply at the 2021 class that Georgia just signed here, where Georgia hit big, and what we can expect from these guys as they begin their college career later on this fall. So thanks so much for stopping by to do that with us.
Yeah, Brandon. Hey, good morning, everybody. Still got Brandon. Still talking 2021 recruiting, and it is a meaty subject still.
So one of the things that I like, and you had a piece up at DogNation.com going back to last weekend, looking at the kind of top superlatives for the 2021 class, which I do think is a good way to kind of put all of this in kind of, you know, retrospective format, and I think that's important for us to be able to do here. We talk so much about the moments as they happen that sometimes to get a chance to go back and look at them I think is also important too. And you kind of ranked your top moments, or you kind of catalog the top moments for Georgia in the 2021 class. And, you know, one of the names in particular that I was away from work when Xavier Sorey announced, signed. That was the big pop for Georgia back in the early signing period back in December. You know, take me back to that, Jeff, because, you know, the Amarius Mims thing we all lived through, the Brock Vandegrift thing was obviously a big deal, but Georgia fans love those fireworks there, either late on a February signing day or an early signing period for December, and that's really what Sorey was for Georgia back in December. So kind of take me back to that top moment in particular. We didn't get a chance to talk about this at the time, but tell me kind of how all that came together and kind of the excitement it provided as a punctuation mark for what had already been a really good class for Georgia.
Yeah, so Brandon, I think the thing that I want to make sure Xavier Sorey doesn't kind of get lost in the shuffle, because he was, I don't know whether that's a good thing or a turn your work in ahead of time type thing for the Georgia recruiting class this year. But he was really the only national signing day or early signing day fireworks for the 2021 class. And it was during a morning where everything that the expected momentum shifts for Georgia's class were going in the opposite direction. Mason Smith, and let his thoughts be known. You saw, you know, Mason Smith domino basically injured all chances of possibility when it was already trending away to begin with, but that likely saw that Corey Foreman wasn't going to happen. Donovan Edwards in the frozen tundra of Detroit chose Michigan, and it's funny, a little postscript on the Donovan Edwards recruiting saga was that his high school head coach, somehow, Brandon, becomes the wide receivers coach at Michigan after the fact. I just wonder how that happened.
I know it.
Certain timing of events, Disney CGI folks could have cooked up that script. But so that was – Xavier was a guy that – and this was different, Brandon. You saw part one of the barbershop video where Georgia was teasing it in their new barbershop, and it's funny, we still haven't seen chapter two yet, and Xavier Sory is in Athens now as an early enrollee, but I guess he's been too busy working out and rehabbing to cut some hair. But I think Sory was basically a line in the sand. I think it gave Georgia another five-star. I believe it moves Georgia into the top three. Some good momentum for the 2021 class, and that's where they still reside. But for Sory, I don't think a lot of people know him. So he's the guy that played small school ball with IMG for his senior year, overcame some injuries, and then he gets back on the field, plays for an IMG Academy team that wins the mythical national title. And it was a different, because the different thing about this, where it comes full circle, Brandon, is he comes back into his high school gym to make his announcement. He's got his IMG uniform there. He's got all his family there. And they pop off confetti, a lot of confetti, that Brandon. So much inside baseball here a little bit, but so much confetti that the Dog Nation kind of video bag where we go and cover recruitments on the road. Uh-huh. I think that thing's going to be filled with confetti for quite some time. It's got that in there because there was so much confetti in that little, I guess I would call it a matchbox type gym that Norman Dale from Hoosiers would be very proud of and feel very familiar with. And you know, Sory is a guy that the wrinkles here are great because he's rated as an outside backer, but he was always going to be an inside linebacker for Georgia. A great win for Georgia for Glenn Schumann recruiting him. And there's a lot of cool little stories around Xavier Sory yet that I don't think a lot of people know yet. And I guess it's our job to share those down the line.
Well, it's also a part of a position group for Georgia very deep in this 2021 class. In fact, when you ranked the deepest position groups that Georgia signed for the class of 2021, inside linebacker does show up on that list, along with offensive line and secondary. And we'll certainly talk a lot about those. But given the fact that Georgia brings in a lot of impressive linebackers in this class, and that's already a position group that I think most people would say Georgia's already pretty deep at, for a guy like Sory, what are his chances of earning early playing time, getting a chance to be a part of the story as a freshman, just given the fact that he's not the only talented linebacker Georgia signed for this cycle, nor is he, you know, certainly far from the only talented linebacker that Georgia already has in the program.
Right. I think here's a good baseline to look for, Brandon. First of all, I would say Sory's the type of guy that can make a difference on special teams quickly. But for me, I'm going to watch Smile Munden Jr., and I'll watch Xavier Sory especially. Those guys aren't really the traditional gap filler, the Monty Rice, N'Kobe Dean, Natress Patrick type inside backer we've seen at Georgia. So for me, I expect a learning curve, so much that I think that Jamon Dumas Johnson, another inside linebacker signee, who's kind of that pure thumper in the Monty Rice mold, I think he might play earlier just because the learning curve will be shallower for him because he knows what to do at inside backer. I think Munden and Sory may, the baseline I'll use here in my evaluation is I wonder, and I'm going to look to see if they follow the same playing time patterns their freshman year as Quay Walker and Channing Tindall did. To me, these seem like the same type of athletes, except even better athletes than even the fabulous Tindall and the, you know, very impressive Quay Walker coming out of high school. That's just Georgia recruiting up on a higher tier instead of top 100 and top 50, top 125 type inside linebackers. Both of these guys are now top 35 inside linebacker recruits that they bring in. The thing with Sory, though, that I hope gets people excited is that was my, I guess, my favorite. Now, it's a limited sample size here because Georgia coaches weren't all over the place, and they weren't anywhere after, like, March the 10th. And they really didn't recruit at all. You know, February was dead in 2020. And then March, they were just hosting in a smattering of very timely, very specific key visitors before the pandemic came down. But really, when they got out on the road to see some members of the 2021 class, it's when they were still recruiting the 2020 cycle in January of 2020. Great story here, Brandon, is Kirby Smart's in the gym watching Graceville High School play basketball, and so many dunks you can find on YouTube or Twitter of Xavier Sory kind of throwing it down. But there was one where he gets a breakaway and he flushes it, basically played above the rim. And Kirby Smart got so excited. I think the assistant principal at Graceville High told me this story, that he basically jumped up with his hands in the air and basically ran outside the gym and then ran back in. He was so excited. So if you want an inside linebacker that can get highlight dunks, that can get the head ball coach, the head football coach, the head dog at the University of Georgia running out of a basketball court, Xavier Sory's your guy.
And, of course, if you talk about deep position groups, it's more than just linebacker. It's offensive line as well, as you said. And we've certainly talked a lot about, you know, some of the guys in this group, whether it be a player like Micah Morris, who is a terrific prospect and yet not the most fireworks related to his commitment to Georgia. That was fairly, you know, by the books. He seemed happy with Georgia. Certainly Georgia's got a lot to like with him. Big-time power program that he comes from. Dylan Fairchild, we covered that recruitment story here on Dog Nation with a terrific video on the day that he announced his Georgia pledge. That's a guy whose recruiting profile, I think, really skyrocketed over the course of his senior season, both as a football player and certainly what he's done on the wrestling mat as well. And then when you talk about Amarius Mims, who I think has a chance to go down as one of the best linemen that Georgia has signed in the Kirby Smart era, Matt Luke, Sam Pittman all put together here. You know, we've gotten so used to talking about Georgia signing these big-time offensive linemen. But, Jeff, there's an argument certainly to be made that what Georgia did with its 2021 offensive line signees is really about as good as anything this group has done dating back to when Smart first took the job in 2016.
Yeah, really. You know, Brandon, if you had your logical, hey, these are the guys Georgia should get, could get, need to get, I think Matt Luke went 4 for 5 this year. The one outstanding guy was Terrence Ferguson, who, of course, had to show up at Alabama. It's kind of a common theme for this 2021 recruiting cycle. If Georgia didn't get the guy, usually it was Alabama getting the guy that they wanted. But aside from that, you got Dylan Fairchild. And really, I think Dylan got his offer. Matt Luke waited face-to-face to give him the offer in March in one of those quick very timely, and no one knew how important that visit was for Fairchild then. He commits at the end of May. You've got Amarius Mims. I still remember the hilarious story. I'm sitting there in the weight room at Blakely County High School, and Amarius Mims on call is telling me, man, Georgia's hitting me up. I'm hearing from Coach Scott Cochran. I'm hearing from Matt Luke all the time, and he's sitting there in the middle of his answer, and all of a sudden his phone starts ringing. And he has a phone that alerts who's ringing, and it goes something like, incoming call, Coach Matt Luke, in the Siri voice we all know. And then Amarius Mims has a big chuckle, and he's like, see what I'm talking about? I mean, it couldn't have worked any better if he would have said, hey, Coach Luke, this would be a good video here if you call me in 5 minutes. You try to call me in 5 minutes. But you get Mims, you get Micah Morris, who I think was one of the easier recruitments of the cycle. He's an All-American. He's from South Georgia. He's one of those down South Georgia boys from Camden County. So impressive off the field. Alabama wanted him, of course. Alabama was actually his dream school growing up. But Georgia gets him. And Georgia, I guess Sam Pittman basically had him at hello, to use a Jerry Maguire reference. And then maybe Matt Luke had him at hello as well, because Morris had silently committed right before the Notre Dame game in 2019. And then he held that silent commitment, and that commitment stuck through the transition from Pittman to Luke. That's how much he really just wanted to be a Georgia Bulldog. And what they've done, you've got three All-Americans, and I think that basically the guy I call the Eric Stokes recruit of this class, and that's the guy that it's going to be that three-star that everybody starts parming out, and they say, oh, three-star, look what Georgia did with this guy. They found him. and it's going to make the coaches and the program look good in terms of development. That's three-star Jared Wilson out of North Carolina, who is really the only member of this 20-person class that sounds weird, Brandon, but he's playing spring football, high school football from like March to May in North Carolina because he wanted his senior year, and because he wanted that senior year, he got the chance to play with his youngest brother at West Forsyth High School. This is something a reporter dude like me notices because we look for trends or similarities. Somehow Georgia signed two great offensive linemen from the same high school in different states. Can you imagine those ESPN broadcasters or CBS broadcasters in a big game going, okay, you got Georgia coming out of West Forsyth High School at one guard, and then the other guard coming out of West Forsyth High School, that people are going to go, what? Did they clean up with two starting guards from the same high school? West Forsyth in North Carolina is the home of Jared Wilson. West Forsyth in Cumming, Georgia is the home of Dylan Fairchild.
Yeah, I remember when K.J. Henry was coming out of high school, also from West Forsyth up in North Carolina, how confusing that was at the time when you realized it was the same school, or I should say the same name, but two different schools, obviously in two different states. And speaking of that, let me just squeeze in one more thing with you for right now, and we'll obviously hear a lot from you over the course of the next couple of days. But you mentioned the 20 signees, 10 of those in-state. How much do you think the pandemic that we've all dealt with over the course of the last year kind of forced Georgia to kind of lean on its in-state connections, whether it be Fairchild out of West Forsyth, or you mentioned Camden County? You can look at a lot of in-state, you know, prospects that Georgia cleaned up with this year, especially the most highly ranked players from inside the state of Georgia. How much of that was Georgia's plan all along, and how much of that was kind of an altered plan on the basis of the global pandemic?
Good question. Brandon, I think it's kind of like an audible, very much an on-the-fly audible. Like, heaven forbid Georgia would have taken Caleb Williams early in the 2020 cycle in the year 2019 for the 2021 cycle. And if Georgia's marquee quarterback commitment would have been living in Washington, D.C. during the pandemic, oh my, that would have been very hard for Georgia to bring in an Amarius Mims, Brock Bowers, because, you know, Vandergriff played such a key role in, like, hosting recruits that were in for breakfast. He would meet them. He would tell them, he would show them around campus. Brock even told me one time he had to bone up and get the intel on the Chamber of Commerce business around Clark County to kind of be a tour guide, kind of be a different kind of Pied Piper, not leading him to come play with him so much, but basically chaperoning them around their visits to Georgia. Brock took for the Auburn game, I believe, Brock Bowers was coming into town for another independent self-visit, and he had an extra ticket for the game, and Brock Vandergriff was watching the Auburn game with Brock Bowers. And this might tell you a little bit about Pac-12 and football out west, Brandon, but Sanford Stadium was diluted at 20% capacity, and it was as loud as Brock Bowers and his family could have imagined, or in any football game they'd ever been in. And Brock was telling them, he's like, hey, man, this is nowhere near as loud as it gets on a Saturday. And it was almost like somebody saying, you know, there's going to be a lot more fun here than what's currently being had here. It's like looking at only one page of the menu of your favorite restaurant. But you sit there and you go, Brock Vandergriff, key building block. Who would have known how important January of 2020 would have been? The decommitment from Oklahoma, the commitment to Georgia. You know, you look at that list, Brandon, that you'd love to see, you know, how Georgia does in the state. You know, they get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm counting 6 out of the state's top 10. Now, there were some misses. They'd have loved to have Barrett Carter. I think they would have loved to have had Jordan Hancock out of Ohio State. Another key defensive back for me is Nathaniel Wiggins, who drifts out of the state, goes to LSU, and then Clemson cherry picks his commitment at the very end and brings him to Clemson. I think Georgia still wanted some more out-of-state targets. See Donovan Edwards, see James Williams, see Terrion Arnold, see Mason Smith, see Corey Foreman. But it's almost the culture of familiarity and staying close to home. You know, I can reference some guys. You know, one of the things with Tyreek Stevenson's decision to portal away to Miami was that it was awfully hard for him to get back home during the pandemic, when travel was so limited and he was so far away. That's a lot of space of a season where your family can't come see you play, and you can't be around your loved ones maybe on the weekends or breaks, especially when you're trying to stay safe and maintain social distancing on road trips and everything to kind of keep the season intact. I think home grown Bulldogs were as important as ever this cycle.
Jeff, great stuff. We're going to have more from you, including tomorrow, a really interesting look at Georgia running back signing Lavoisier Carroll. Can't wait to talk to you about that. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp today. And I'll certainly look forward to getting a chance to chat with you here on our program again tomorrow.
All right, Brandon, let's tee it up again soon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, really good stuff there from Jeff Sintel. We'll hear more from him on tomorrow's show, then again on Monday as well. Looking at those top superlatives for that class of 2021, a great way to evaluate exactly what Georgia has brought in for this class. I'm really thankful to have Jeff able to do that with him. With that said, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp, let's get ready to transition to our SEC Through. And much the same way, we're going to kind of take a couple days to evaluate Georgia's 2021 class. Here with signing day over, spring practice for the SEC, still a couple of weeks away from beginning, thought it might be kind of an appropriate time to also stop and do a little bit of an evaluation of where things stand around the SEC at the moment. So today for our SEC Through, here's the topic I wanted to kind of address. When you look at Georgia in the current landscape of the SEC East, obviously Georgia's not the reigning division champion at the moment. That is still the Florida Gators, unfortunately, as Eddie the Blind Squirrel laments. But nonetheless, Georgia is going to be the odds-on favorite to win this division. When all the preseason predictions start coming out, you'll start seeing some of that now. But certainly heading towards the summer when the magazines hit the newsstands and you know all the things related to that, I don't think there'll be very many outlets that pick Florida to win the East this year, despite the fact they did win the division a year ago. Most of this is going to be Georgia. But I am curious to kind of note, well, is there any competition then for Georgia? If we see Georgia get the lion's share of the predictions from the media types, is there any argument to be made for anybody else in this league or in this division? And the first thing you note is, kind of before we get to Florida, that a lot of the rest of this division right now kind of reminds you of the first division that Smart won at Georgia back in 2017. When Georgia was kind of laying waste to most of this division. And the lack of depth this division seemed to have then, there's a lot about what's going to happen in 2021 that kind of reminds me of much the same thing. Listen, at South Carolina, for instance, I like Luke Doty at quarterback. I do. I think that a couple times, you know, towards the end of the season, he showed some flashes for the Gamecocks. You could make a case that South Carolina should have been playing him sooner. But I don't know that Doty alone is going to be enough to save Shane Beamer in his first year, especially after all the turmoil that emerged there with, you know, Beamer thinking he had hired the, you know, collection of assistants that he wasn't able to hold on to. A lot of those guys got poached by Auburn. And when you look at the overall, you know, South Carolina did not sign very many guys for its 2021 class. Some of that's just on the basis of Gamecocks just having to get up and running quick with a new coaching staff in a pandemic world. Maybe they didn't have the opportunity to sign as many guys they would wanted. Some of this is also, as we've talked about on the show, you know, related to, you know, hey, let's not take a chance on a high school kid if we have a chance, go in and bring a transfer. But one way or another, I think South Carolina is probably terrible this upcoming season. Same thing is probably true for Tennessee. I don't know that any roster, you'd have to be pretty talented for this even to be true, but I don't know that any roster has seen as much attrition from one year to the next, not counting like graduation, stuff like that, just guys leaving the program, as what Tennessee has dealt with. Josh Heupel may end up being an okay coach there, but as it stands now, I just don't think they have the kind of players to avoid just a really, really bad, disastrous season. You know, Tennessee does not feel like a threat to me to Georgia at all. You can make a slight case for Missouri if you want. You can make a slight case for Kentucky if you want. But those are relatively tepid arguments all the way around. No one cares about Vanderbilt at all. I won't even dignify them with a mention here. But when you look at Florida more closely, that's obviously the one that everybody cares about. And you know that Florida doesn't have Kyle Trask anymore. You know Kyle Pitts is gone from there. You know, this was a defense for Florida that gave up an average of, 40-plus points a game over the final three games of the season, all three losses to LSU, then to Alabama in the SEC Championship, then in the bowl game to Oklahoma as well. You know how it ended for the Gators a year ago. What does that mean for Florida coming back for 2021? I think a lot of this is going to center on, does Rick Gilbert get the eligibility to play right away? We were told last year when guys like Cade Mays got eligibility leaving Georgia going to Tennessee, this was just kind of a one-time thing. This was just pandemic related. You're not going to do this beyond just this one year. We'll see if the SEC can really stick to that. Ultimately, I don't expect much from Florida this season. I am curious with their quarterback race. I think people talk about Emory Jones, the likely starter there. I would not count out Anthony Richardson, another guy in that competition, eventually winning the job. I think one of the interesting names in this Florida roster this year is DeMarcus Bowman, the former Clemson running back coming to Florida. That's another former five-star. Dan Mullen has brought in a lot of those type of guys. But one of his great weaknesses at Florida has also been his inability to run the football. Does the presence of Bowman kind of change that? Ultimately, I think one of the greatest arguments for Georgia this upcoming season is the lack of threat and challenge they should face in the SEC East. The Georgia-Florida game is a big game. Georgia has to have it circled because it's a revenge game for Georgia. You at least have to respect the Gators enough to acknowledge they beat Georgia a year ago. This year, though, Georgia should be more of a sizable favorite. In fact, I think that Georgia should pretty well coast through almost all of its SEC East games, circling the game in Jacksonville as one that really matters and one that Georgia needs to make sure that it gives its best shot to when it comes to that. But this could be an SEC East this year that does not provide much in the way of formidable challenge for the Dogs. So obviously we hope that's the case. There's nothing Georgia fans would love more than a chance to beat up on those lousy, stinking Gators. Clearly that's one of the reasons why we close the show the way we do here each and every day. I want to remind you this, because I'm pre-recording, I don't have a golden shoe to give out today, but we do give out the golden shoe each and every day to someone who shows off some Gator hater credentials. So if you'd like to be the golden shoe, hit me up on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. People have been sharing their reasons for Gator hate, and they've been showing us some photos from their Gator hating past. Some folks have made some really good Photoshop type stuff and everything else. So if you'd like to be a golden shoe winner, hit us up online at Dog Nation Daily. And when we return back to live shows again on Tuesday, we will certainly look forward to honoring you with that. But we will continue our Gatorator countdown. We do it each and every day. We'll remind you that 261 days from right now, Georgia goes to Florida, gets a win over those lousy, stinking Gators, get some revenge. That's some good news. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.